Welcome to the weekend edition of the Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. On today's program, we got a lot to cover, as always, and looking forward to introducing you to today's guests. But in addition to that, I do want to mention that the Price of Business, which is one of the longest-running business shows in the country, continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com. We are adding new content all the time. There you can see all of our regular guests. We have reoccurring guests from Fox Business, from Yahoo Finance, gentlemen like Cody Willard, who was a longtime CNBC and Fox Business anchor. He's on this program every single week. And so we're excited by the talent that we bring you. Also, I do want to mention I've got a book called Making New Rich Books Work for You, and exclusively for our listeners of this program. It's available at a ridiculously low price. If you want to get more information about that, go to priceofbusiness.com. If you read anything by people like Tim Ferriss or Robert Kiyosaki, who's been on my show many, many times, and you know, really were excited but had little to show for it when you try to pursue those things, my book explains why. There's something going on, and the problem really isn't with these authors. It's usually with the reader. And you can get more information about that at priceofbusiness.com. With that, here's our first guest right here on The Price of Business. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. It's your business to know about the law and how it's affecting every aspect of your life. It's your business to know about what's happening that's really important in the media front, particularly as it relates to the law. And so that's why I'm really excited about John O'Connor joining our media team here. He'll be doing reoccurring commentaries on business, the law, the political front, and the media. And we're delighted to have him join us. He's distinguished in the legal profession. He is an experienced trial lawyer practicing law in San Francisco since the early 70s. And he has tried cases in state and federal courts throughout the country. He served as an assistant U.S. attorney in Northern California, representing the United States in both criminal and civil cases. But he may be best known for his work as the attorney of Mark Felt, whom most of you know as Deep Throat in the Watergate situation. And he became very familiar with the role of the Washington Post in Watergate in his representation of Mark Felt. And so he brings a lot of experience. He also wrote briefs regarding Patty Hearst, United States versus Patty Hearst, and really had himself involved in some of the biggest lawsuits of the 20th century, representing the federal government in the vast majority of those cases. So we're delighted to have him. He's going to be bringing his interesting insights every other week here on the Price of Business show. You can learn more about him and his work at postgatebook.com. That's postgatebook.com. And that's the name of the book that he talks about most often. It relates to media, Postgate. And again, that's postgatebook.com. All right, with that, John O'Connor.
Thanks, Kevin. The Price of Business has asked me to speak on the media's role in Russiagate falsity. Hillary Clinton, James Comey, and John Brennan conspired against Donald Trump in the 2016 election, tagging him to a Russian collusion hoax, but would not have been able to do so without a complicit media. We are now embarking on the discovery of the biggest scandal in the history of the United States. It is the false Russian collusion conspiracy, which conveniently we will call Russiagate. The suffix gate is a reference to Watergate, meant to denote a major political scandal such as Iran-Contragate, Monica Gate, and Plamegate. The scandal is much like Watergate, but far more heinous. Most do not realize that a major wrongdoer in Watergate was the CIA, and if so, the legacy press through the Washington Post was not far behind. The Post's reporting of the Richard Nixon administration's dirty campaign tricks, so alleged, led to Nixon's ignominious resignation from office on August 9, 1974. The only resignation of a president in our country's history. I have written and spoken before about how the Post knew, but the White House did not, that the CIA was intimately involved in Watergate. The only thing that the campaign had to do with the burglary was that the CIA got the clueless Gordon Liddy of the campaign to give cash to the burglars. Liddy could not understand the campaign purpose for this expenditure, and in fact, there was none. The Post knew all this, but preferred to blacken the name of a popularly reelected president. The Russiagate drama had many of the same features, but very different in their permutations and combinations. Like Watergate, there were dirty campaign tricks, but they were not of Trump, they were of Hillary Clinton. The press knew all of this from DNC documents revealed by WikiLeaks, showing that Clinton had corrupted the DNC to cheat rival Bernie Sanders out of a fair chance at nomination. The media knew this, but chose not to emphasize that, but to emphasize instead the fable presented by the Clinton campaign that the far greater wrong was that Putin had, quote, hacked and leaked, unquote, these internal documents in order to help Donald Trump. But this false story could only be effective if the legacy media bought it. Jennifer Palmieri, the Clinton campaign's communication director, said that, quote, her mission was to get the press focused on something even they found difficult to process, the proposition that Russia had not only hacked and stolen emails from the DNC, but that it had done so to help Donald Trump and hurt Hillary Clinton. That is the essence of Russiagate right there, a false story which could only be effective if the press bought it. We know today that the FBI decided to promote the story to the point of a falsely predicated crossfire hurricane counterintelligence investigation, including 4 falsely obtained FISA warrants to spy on the Trump campaign, and including spying later on his presidency. It is doubtful that James Comey's FBI would have done this if the media had even suggested that Russiagate was a hoax. Comey saw that the media lapped the story up as thirsty dogs and knew he could tarnish Trump while avoiding any criticism himself. And if he got away with this, as he knew he would, Hillary would owe him big time and Comey would later have run for the Senate from Virginia with President Clinton's financial backing. Likewise with the CIA's knowledge, CIA Director John Brennan knew at least by July 28, 2016, that the hack and leak story of Putin-Trump collusion was nonsense. He reported so in an Oval Office meeting on July 28, 2016, and later followed up with a criminal referral to Comey's FBI. However, for public consumption, to the media, he said otherwise, knowing the publicity would harm Trump and help Clinton. After he briefed Nevada Senator Harry Reid, Reid published a fierce anti-Trump screed based on Russian collusion, obviously the result of Brennan's lies contrary to his private referrals. How can we be sure, though, that the media would not have published the truth if they had reason to know better? We know now that President Obama ordered a false and politicized ICA, or Intelligence Community Assessment, to be published in early 2017. However, that ICA, or Intelligence Community Assessment, on its face adopted the themes of the so-called Steele dossier and indeed incorporated references to it while attaching a summary. Thus, the false ICA was to some degree based on the false Steele dossier. But by prearrangement, the inclusion of the ICA gave license to DNI James Clapper to leak it, followed by a publication of it by BuzzFeed. In other words, the purpose of this was publication of false stories lapped up by the media. If the media as a whole had a bit of intelligence and an ounce of honesty, the Russiagate hoax would have exploded and Russiagate would have been DOA when Trump took office. A 12-year-old with a computer would soon know that the supposed sources for the dossier were agents of Putin's best friends and allies. Would Putin friends and ally have exposed a slimy interference scheme of Putin's? Of course not. As it was, President Obama expelled 35 Russian diplomats and created a foreign relations crisis. Why would Putin have risked this? He would not have. Why would he take pains to expose his own wrongdoing? He wouldn't have. And why would he be mean to Hillary Clinton? After all, her State Department did give him the great benefits of the sale of Uranium-1 and other dual-use technology from Skolkovo. It should have been clear to the media that there were clear fabrications of the Steele dossier. For instance, the interference scheme was in part to be implemented through the Russian embassy in Miami. However, no Russian embassy existed in Miami. The press could have figured that out in about 3 minutes. Christopher Steele himself, the contractor for this dossier, was a longtime agent of Russia oligarch Oleg Deripaska, a good friend of Putin's. So the only way the dossier made sense was as a dirty trick to help Hillary win, And that is exactly what it was. So we have had for 9 years and counting a false libel of Trump supported by the media. Now that its falsity is clear, the media will now print that story with enthusiasm as a major development, right? Of course not. All we now get from our much ballyhooed media is crickets. So which of the several actors in Russiagate has most harmed our republic? None of this would have happened without a media both gullible and partisan.
Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. It's a show that never ends. What we mean by that is our great business, lifestyle, and more content is continuously updated at priceofbusiness.com. Make sure to check it out and get our newsletter called Read Instead. Dr. John Pujillo, he's with me today. One of my personal favorites, a show favorite, and brings up. It's always interesting to speak to someone who is a true authority, a medical doctor, who brings a different perspective when it comes to healthcare. He's very holistic in his view. He wants to leverage our body's natural abilities, avoid shortcuts, for health results that are often only of short value and often dangerous long-term wise. So it's decidedly different. Dr. John, glad to have you back on the program. And his website is Dr. John on Health. Always glad to have you on the show. I do want to mention your book. Your book's really fantastic. And I read it. I found it very powerful. I have been pre-diabetic, and that has changed significantly since using your book. And mention it real quickly, and also the best website. It's all over the place. You can get it probably the easiest at Amazon. But a little bit about your book.
I thank you for having me on your nationally syndicated and great radio show.
And a little bit about your book and the best way to find it.
Well, it is available on Amazon, as you mentioned, and Barnes & Noble, they also have it.
And so I encourage people to check it out. Diabetes, the Real Cause and the Right Cure is the name of the book. All right, Dr. John, we're going to get into a topic that is one of the hottest today. And, in fact, breaking news this week about another drug in this class of drugs that we're going to talk about, which are GLP-1 drugs. This has got shortcut and panacea written all over it, these drugs.
Yes, approximately 12% of adults in the United States have used GLP-1 medication. GLP stands for glucagon-like peptide 1. So this is the current craze of the weight loss movement.
Yeah. And it's designed so you don't have to live and eat healthy. but you can have... You can have, according to them, you can have your cake and eat it too. Pun intended. You're able to cheat continuously. The reality is these drugs do help with your appetite, reducing your appetite. No doubt about that from everything I've read. But it has all kinds of side symptoms. Often the symptoms, side effects outweigh the benefits often. And that's not to downplay the importance of addressing obesity and sugar intake, but these drugs are not a panacea.
Well, the first thing is, how does this medications work? Then we can understand whether it is good or bad. When you eat, your brain monitors what you are eating. When you have had enough, it sends a signal by dulling the hunger intensity and reducing the intensity of taste. And that is your brain's way of saying you had enough. The brain also sends signals to release insulin from the pancreas to lower blood sugar to make room for incoming glucose. GLP medication is the same signaling molecule with one difference. The duration of action is for hours instead of minutes. And this prolongs the suppression of hunger, meaning you eat less and you lose weight.
Yeah, and that is the heart of the these drugs. This is the and it is proven to be effective for that. But I wonder about larger symptom issues that are coming along. I worry about, okay, they're still eating garbage because they think they can. In fact, in some ways, they're almost incentivized to, and that's their inclination, because they think they can get away with it. So there's a lot of side effect problems, secondary effects, that I don't think are weighed in that much in the conversation.
Absolutely. But look at this. The obesity rate among adults doubled since 1990 and quadrupled among children between 5 and 19, meaning they are going to be obese in the near future as they become adults. So there is no difficulty in understanding why these medications are popular, because most people who try normal weight loss control mechanisms regain the weight and they feel they are helpless and they're addicted to food and the only solution is medication.
Yeah, no question about it. Let's start with that. Let's talk a little bit about, actually, and again, that is the conventional wisdom by a medical community that works in direct tandem with a pharmaceutical community. You know, for the medical doctors, it becomes cash flow. This is a way for medical doctors, because they don't help you get cured of the problems related here. It's cash flow. You can't just get prescriptions. You got to make sure that they're the right prescriptions at the right amount. So you're continuously engaging with doctors. In the pharmaceutical community, they love that cash flow. It continues ongoing. There is an alternative way. You talk about it all the time. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, let us stop. Answer the question that you raised a minute ago. What are the problems with this medication? When you stop taking GLP-1 medication such as Ozempic, you start gaining weight. Yes, you may feel less hungry on these drugs, but they can prevent you from eating nutrients your body needs in a timely fashion in sufficient quantities. So the result is going to be malnutrition and symptoms like fatigue, mental fog, and muscle loss. That is going to come. So that is the main problem with these medications. You cannot depend on it for the long term.
Exactly. And in addition to that, you know, we haven't even got into really some horrible stomach issues, and some of which for some people they never recover from, or they haven't recovered from yet. So they start having huge amounts of diarrhea. They have really uncontrollable at times bowel movements. And once they get into that cycle, many of these people never get out of it. It dramatically changes their lives forever, which means they should really look at the situation at the beginning rather than waiting for these potential consequences.
Well, as you mentioned, the alternative is to take charge of your own eating habits. The food intake control mechanisms evolved during our evolution from based on plant-based nutrient intake. Since the agricultural revolution 60 years ago, our food intake is primarily grain-based. They are rich in calories but poor in nutrients compared to plant-based meals. So the right solution is going back to how humans were eating for thousands of years and being healthy without using any medications to control their weight. All you have to do is look at during your toddler years, we all practice this way of eating. And with practice, we can do it again. So the right solution is increasing plant-based meals and reducing the energy intake from complex carbohydrates to less than 30% of your daily food energy intake.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. So a lot of people feel like, you know, again, it's all very convenience-driven. It's all very comfort-driven. We don't want to do the hard work. Your book basically on avoiding type 2 diabetes that I alluded to earlier that I read, it's there. I mean, we're not talking about, trying to take a trip to the moon. You really reverse type 2 diabetes. It does not have to taunt you and haunt you for the rest of your life. So you've got an entire population, I would say maybe the majority, who even knowing they don't have to do drugs for the rest of their lives, which comes with a whole bunch of other problems. A lot of the problems that they have are similar to those who don't treat diabetes. They just simply can't imagine exercising self-discipline, which is really at the heart of your solution.
Yes. In addition to that, we can save Medicare and Medicaid and the whole healthcare system from going to bankruptcy, because most of their expenditure is related to weight gain and diabetes-related complications.
Yeah. Give us some final thoughts and some takeaways for the listener.
All you have to do is take charge of your own health through diet control, diet and food intake. We all enjoy eating, but take time to enjoy what you eat by slowing down, chewing the food as you eat, and enjoying the meal. As when the intensity of enjoyment slows down, stop eating. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, that's interesting. And don't let the "I don't want to waste food" become a reason why you get fat. You don't want to waste money on doctor visits either. Maybe they have different portions. You know, in the same vein, you know, I find that, Dr. John, that if I don't look at my phone and I'm present when I eat, I'm much more aware of the fact that, oh, I'm full now. Whereas you end up getting distracted by entertainment, your phone, TV, whatever, you're lacking mindfulness. You're going to eat more than you probably want, and certainly more than you need.
Exactly. Keep mindful eating is the key, and that gives you more enjoyment. Enjoyment from eating is one of the pleasures you start from the moment you are born until you die.
Very good note to end on, Dr. John Pahota, on health, and we call him that, Dr. John on Health. Make sure you check out that website, and Dr. John, always love having you on. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Kevin Price. This is the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. Stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price. I'm talking to you today about you and your business. And let's face it, it's all of our business to be concerned about what's going on in the larger culture, in the political front, you name it. And we live in really weird times, kind of stuff that I thought could eventually happen. I've not been very optimistic for decades, to be honest with you, when it comes to the political front. I have optimism in other areas. But I thought a lot of the craziness we see today would happen decades from now, like after I was dead. Maybe that was wishful thinking, but no, it's accelerating. And a lot of it is in an unusual place. I've got a great guest. He's a regular on the Price of Business. He's a regular on the Price of Business Digital Network. He is a critically acclaimed author and really a great researcher at that. His work, he really rolled up his sleeves in doing his work. David Wilcox, glad to have you on the program. Let's talk real quick on the just a quick overview of your book, the Flim Flam Chronicles, before we get into our topic, which is The Light of Truth Continues to Shine, which a lot of people have a hard time seeing that, but we're getting more awareness about some things that we did not have in the past.
Kevin, first of all, thanks for having me back. It's always a pleasure. Yeah, I wrote two books under the heading of the Flim Flam Chronicles. The Flim Flam Chronicles is my website where I store a lot of my audio narratives and commentaries on the two books. I was Pat Robertson's bodyguard for a number of years. Pat just passed away recently, but Pat had an interesting dynamic with politics, and that's pretty much what drove these books, was that Pat was a very well-known televangelist, very controversial, very polarizing society-wise, and was doing a lot of great things in his CBN ministry in the 700 Club TV show, and then politics entered into his life. He'd always been a child of politics. He had been raised in a family of politicians. His dad was a U.S. senator from Virginia for a number of terms, and so Pat used to joke that his first words as a baby was "constituent," and he ended up running for president in 88 when I was one of his bodyguards at that time. And this is before the Secret Service took him over officially for a period. But I watched this transformation, and politics, it seems lately, a lot of things are coming to the forefront, but it seems that everything that politics touches gets corrupted. And I saw this with Pat Robertson. There was a time, I mentioned it in my book, Protecting Pat Robertson, Confessions of a High-Priced Bagman, that I was sitting in the company car with Pat, and he was having a conversation with his campaign manager and his finance manager for the CBN ministry, Rob Hartley, a very godly man. And they were going back and forth. Mark Nuttall, his campaign manager at the time, was saying, Pat, we got to get access to the CBN donor list. We need some money. We're going broke on your campaign. And Rob Hartley said, you can't do that, Pat. It's illegal. You'll lose your tax-exempt status, blah, blah, blah. And it went back and forth. And finally, these horrible words came forth, and it said, I heard Pat say, give him the list. And it was a gut punch. And if you fast forward from that one decision, that decision cost CBN so much money in lost donations that 630 people lost their jobs as a matter of financial layoffs. And Pat went into politics, and it just decimated everything that he had built up because of all the compromises that had to be made to progress in his campaign. So an offshoot of that was, at the same time he was getting involved in politics, he started this little organization called the Christian Coalition. Now, people my age probably remember that. It became a political juggernaut. It was just about the strongest lobbying group on behalf of spirit-filled Christians that you could ever imagine. And he put a neophyte kid in charge of it named Ralph Reed. Well, if you're still alive and kicking, you've probably heard of Ralph Reed in the last couple of decades. And he started off as the head of the Christian Coalition politics, and it corrupted him. He ended up becoming a lobbyist buddy of Jack Abramoff, who went to prison for lobbying improprieties. And Reed and a whole bunch of other guys were involved in a lot of shady deals, and it just seemed that everything that politics touches, Kevin, gets corrupted eventually. So
David, really important. We have about a 10-minute total interview, and that was a really long introduction. And we have a very important topic, so we need to transition into the topic itself.
Gotcha.
So go ahead and set the stage for it.
Well, the other book was a book I put together about Ralph Reed, and just it encompasses his career going from the head of the Christian Coalition, professing to be God's spokesman for politics, and then ends up with all of his corruption. It was irrefutable evidence that he committed multiple felonies and was never held accountable for his crimes.
Yeah. And by the way, Ralph Reed was Abramoff's lapdog in the early 80s when I worked on Capitol Hill, and knew both of them because I was I don't even want to go there, but I was very passionate Republican conservative. I still consider myself right of center, but I think what has happened is in politics is it's become a form of idolatry. It's a problem on both the left and the right, but the right is particularly problematic when you have people like Donald Trump treated in a messianic sort of way. God help us. And I'm very familiar with it, and you're right, because frankly, he was running around in the same circles with some people who got in trouble, particularly Abramoff, who got in so much trouble, they created a whole law named after him after he went to prison, which, by the way, he broke the law once he got out of prison.
it's an interesting
group.
Yeah, well, Abramoff and a guy named Michael Scanlon and then Ralph Reed, I call them the unholy trinity, they were involved in protecting gambling casinos down in Louisiana. And Reed made millions off of it. And this was a guy that a few years before had raised millions for the Christian Coalition, calling gambling a cancer. It was ruining families. It was stealing food from babies. and, you know, send us your money and we'll fight the evil gambling. And fast forward a few years with Abramoff, and they're protecting these gambling casinos. So it's just, it's the duplicity that politics causes is just rampant.
It is. And it really does become serving, are we serving God or mammon? And just watch the so-called Christian conservatives today. It's hard. We live in such a binary culture, David, that if you're for this, you're against that. If you're against that, you're for this. You know, and, you know, we live in a, sadly, in a country that has really only two parties for all practical purposes. And the political system is designed to keep it that way. And so if you're critical of the Republicans, you are a socialist Democrat. If you're critical of the Democrats, you're a fascist Republican. And that's why we are so polarized. It's because we're so binary. And, you know, I look at a country like Denmark. Denmark, total population is about the size of the greater Houston area where I live, the metropolitan area. And our better example, Dallas-Fort Worth. But, you know, come on, there's no comparison. Yet Denmark has 15 major parties, with major being they actually people elected the parliament. And, you know, here it's, you know, it's impossible. The system is so stacked to support only two parties, which is why both parties are so terrible, frankly. They're both terrible.
That's exactly the word that came to mind, was stacked. The deck is stacked. It's all a bunch of gatekeepers. They'll only allow in what they want to allow in. And, you know, Reed, of all people, knows how to play it. He did multiple favors for the George Bush Sr.'s campaign through the Christian Coalition, illegally bolstered them to the tune of about $1 million in voter guides that were slanted towards him. They helped George W. Bush during his campaign. Bush was figured to lose. He got his rear end handed to him in New Hampshire in the primary and came down to South Carolina, where Bush had a 50-point lead, and that evaporated as a result of New Hampshire. And if Bush had lost South Carolina, he would not have gotten the nomination for president. And they called in Ralph Reed, and he developed a smear campaign that just devastated John McCain. It's just filled with lies and innuendo, and he ended up saving Bush, and then you know, Bush obviously became president, and then he owed Ralph Reed big time. So Ralph Reed was supposed to be subpoenaed with Abramoff and Scanlon at a Senate hearing, investigative hearing, for the Indian casino scandal, and he never showed up. His subpoena got squashed. Well, who had the gravitas to do that? Karl Rove and George Bush. And it's just it's all quid pro quo is all it is.
Yeah, or, you know, he strikes me as the type who could have pretty thick fouls on important individuals. We don't want to go there with Ralph. He knows too much. I won't put him, you know, in spite of the obvious issues with Reed, I won't put him in the Epstein universe. There's a different weird and a different problem there. But that's exactly how Epstein lasted as long as he did, was that information he had on others. And so, yeah, there's no question about it. We're fixing to be running out of time. I want to take a moment to ask you, Reed was everywhere all the time for decades, and all of a sudden, it's almost like he's MIA. What is he up to now?
He has cloned, use that word specifically, he cloned the Christian Coalition, updated it to the 2020s, and he runs a group called the Faith and Family Coalition down out of Georgia. He's appealing to all the deep-pocketed, naive conservative Christians, still professing to be spokesman for God and you know, follow me. I'll be the tip of the spear for conservative Christian people. And then he's got all this felony baggage that he's never been charged with. He's never been prosecuted. But the evidence in my book, it's called The Trial of the Devil Incarnate, Ralph Reed, God's Flim Flam Man. I've got his canceled checks that were laundered. I've got his emails for conspiracy. with Jack Abramoff and Michael Scanlon. I mean, it's ironclad stuff, but he walked away scot-free because of Friends in High Places. And he's still doing the same thing. He's just got a better tailored suit now because he can afford it.
David, very interesting segment. We need to get your website out real quick. Mention it at the beginning. Mention it again. We're officially playing Beat the Clock, and we went over. Give your website.
People can go to theflimflamchronicles.com. There's a bunch of narratives there. And also you could visit bigfatcatbooks.com and get a copy of the book. It's jaw-dropping.
Yep. Got to end with that. I'm Kevin Price. That was David Wilcox. You're listening to the Nationally Syndicated Price of Business. Do you want to mention that what you heard was our opinion? We're not making statements as fact. This is opinion based on facts we have seen. So keep that in mind. I'm Kevin Price. Stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the Nationally Syndicated Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. I get lectures from people saying, hey, we loved your show, love your videos, love your audios, articles, you name it. Why don't you talk about where we can find it more often? Of course, when they've gotten the links to email us to tell us that, they could have already found it. But anyway, I get it. They're right. They're helping me with my marketing. So by all means, we like to say the Price of Business is a show that never ends. It continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com. One of the people you'll find there and throughout our digital network is Elizabeth Thied, and she's with a great company called BT Search, which is a very innovative company. Elizabeth, glad to have you on the program. Real quickly, a little bit about BT Search to get us started here today.
Yeah, DT Search has enterprise and developer products that run on premises or on cloud platforms to instantly search terabytes of office files, PDFs, emails along with nested attachments, databases, and online data. Because DT Search can instantly search terabytes with over 25 different concurrent search options, many of our customers are Fortune 100 companies and government agencies, but anyone with lots of data to search can download a fully functional 30-day evaluation copy from dtsearch.com.
Yeah, and I encourage people to do that, dtsearch.com. I lost it there for just a second. Okay, our topic today is kind of scary, but but exciting. You have this great knack of tying our interviews with what's going on and the greater culture, and today is a good example of that.
Yeah, so few people know this, but May is the official Zombie Awareness Month. So before we left May, I thought I would turn to the zombies, and today's topic is the return of the zombies and how enterprise search can help in the data world. I would define zombies as anything left undead in your data that can pop up later and cause trouble. This makes finding zombies a classic case for enterprise search and DT search.
I love this. I love this topic. So for those who aren't familiar with DT search, how does it work exactly? And this is important for the listener because, frankly, I'm surprised by the dearth of technology in this space, even after all these years. You guys are still very cutting edge, and you're one of the first players. And yet there's very few things more important these days in business. Still, it's like data is king. So talk a little bit about that, how it works.
Yeah, DT Search works by building one or more indexes, each holding up to a terabyte of data. You might hear the word indexing and think, that sounds hard. Indexing is a lot of work, but only for the DT Search indexer. All you need to do to kick off indexing is point to the folders, email archives, and the like to cover, and Enterprise Search will take it from there. If you went through your files yourself, you typically review each and its associated application. Outlook for emails, Adobe Acrobat Reader for PDFs, Microsoft Word for memos, etc.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. But DT Search doesn't do that.
Yeah, rather than reviewing files and their associated applications, the indexer works with the binary version of files. For each binary file, the indexer figures out the exact file format, then applies the correct template to recognize all text and metadata. The part of the software that does this is called the document filters. Binary file access works for parsing both standalone files and multi-level nested files. You can have an email with a zip or RAR attachment that itself contains a Word file with an Excel spreadsheet inside. Binary formats let the indexer and its document filters automatically work with all of that, down to the innermost component.
So what about mismatched file extensions?
Yeah, while mismatched file extensions might throw you off if you were individually reviewing files, mismatched file extensions like an Access database save with a PDF extension or PowerPoint save with a OneNote file extension will not affect the indexer. The reason is that the document filters look inside the binary format to figure out the file format. The file extension is not relevant.
Interesting. So what about text that blends in with its background color? That's always a nightmare if you're doing it manually, right?
Yes. Yes. Camouflage text, like black text against a black background or white text against a white background, can, of course, occur if someone is trying to obscure text in a file. But it can also occur with certain redaction programs that show redacted text under a black rectangle where the text may look like it is gone but nonetheless remains. Similarly, with track changes on, certain text may appear deleted, but if the changes are not fully accepted, the deleted text can persist as part of the document. In all of these cases, the document filters are going to see the hidden text.
Yeah. So what about remote data?
Yeah, remote data is also not a problem. So long as SharePoint attachments, Office 365, OneDrive, Dropbox files, and the like present as part of the Windows folder system, the indexer can handle these just like ordinary local files. After recognizing all text and metadata, the indexer stores each unique word and number and the position of each in the data. Indexing can take a bit, but the result is instant searching across terabytes and concurrent searching works in multiple different environments, including a classic Windows environment, a local intranet server, or a SaaS-hosted server. In any of these environments, searching can continue even while indexes update to account for new modified or deleted files. That way, your team can continually keep tabs on zombie and other data.
Yeah, I got to keep tabs on those zombies, no question about it. What types of search options are available?
After indexing, DT Search has over 25 different types of individual and concurrent search options. Search across all data, or limit specific search elements to particular metadata, such as email sender or recipient. Search options include basic, all words, any words, exact phrase searching, Boolean and or not searching, proximity searching, concept searching, number searching, numeric range searching, automatic date and date recognition across popular date formats, and much more. DT Search can even find and generate hash values across all data or flag any credit card numbers in the data.
And what about multilingual text?
Unicode is the standard for all current file types with support for hundreds of international languages. A single file or email can start out in Russian, move to some other European language, then go to double byte Chinese, Japanese, or Korean text, followed by right to left text like Arabic or Hebrew, and then continue on in English. Unicode and Enterprise Search will follow the whole progression. Note that Unicode searching also lets you search for specific Unicode emojis, like the Unicode zombie emoji.
And how does DT Search work with typographical or OCR errors?
Say the word zombies is misspelled in an email or mis-OCR'd as zom-dees. Fuzzy searching can sift through that, adjusting from 1 to 10 to accommodate various typographical deviations. And it can even work with different international languages. And after a search, automatic relevancy ranking can sort retrieve files by hit term density and rarity, so files with rarer search terms and denser configurations come up at the top. And DG Search also supports custom variable term weighting to assign specific positive or negative weight to search terms anywhere in the data, in certain metadata, or near the top or bottom of files. For a different view on search results, the software can resort by a different metric like file date or file location. Whatever the sorting, DG Search shows a full copy of retrieved files with highlighted hits.
And final thoughts?
Yeah, DGSearch.com has fully functional 30-day evaluation enterprise search downloads to get you started on instant concurrent searching across terabytes. Those zombies don't stand a chance.
Very good. Always enjoy having you with us. Again, DGSearch.com, Elizabeth Thede, my guest. You're listening to the nationally syndicated Price of Business. Stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. Always love talking to attorney David Jaffa. Love having him on the program. He's out of Denver, Colorado. And he is a true teacher. He is a true teacher on all things of the law and does a phenomenal job. And, in fact, that's some of the feedback we've gotten back from listeners of providing really useful information to learn how to navigate legal issues. Yes, they want to hire, but they don't want to check their brain at the door when they hire an attorney. And David helps you to go in there equipped. He's a partner in a firm in Denver, Colorado. David, just a minute on the firm and the best website for more information. And welcome, as always.
Thanks, Kevin. A pleasure to be here. Yes, I'm a partner in the law firm of Levin, Jacobs & Jaffa in Denver, Colorado. We provide general legal services. I do a lot of litigation with my associate, Evan House, and Don Jacobson, who's the senior partner, does mediation as well as helps with the litigation and does a lot of civil work. Dan Levin does what we call the transactional work, setting up corporations and doing estate, trust and estate work. So that's us in a nutshell. We're here for you to help you. And we are what we would call today OGs, older guys from a different era appears, but we try to give you the best advice possible under the circumstances.
That's older guys, not original gangsters. Just keep that in mind. David, glad to have you as always. We have a good time, and I always learn a little bit. My wife says anything to help push my IQ in the right direction is appreciated. So I chime in on that and agree. Persuasive advocacy in your business, a look back. That is our topic today, and it's an interesting one. Set the stage for us.
Okay. You know, in everything we do in life, personally as well as in our business life, out on the street, how we look, how we try to conduct ourselves involves persuasion. You are trying to persuade somebody else that what you want to do is correct. In business especially, and that's really what we're going to focus on today, it is important that if you go for a loan, if you want to convince a business partner of a position, you need to persuade them. And I have given a lot of thought to this topic today because I see the world as it is. And we're living in a world where the idea of giving thought and credence and respect to the other is kind of a lost art in and of itself. Persuasion requires that. And that's why I wanted to start today with going way back in time to the beginning of the United States with the persuasive argument by Patrick Henry in his Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech. And it's just the very beginning of that I think requires us to understand how any business person is going to seek counsel or to persuade his partner or his banker or her banker. And that starts like this. It's just one sentence, really. No man thinks more highly than I do of the patriotism as well as abilities of the very worthy gentleman who have just addressed the House. Now, this was a speech where Patrick Henry says, hey, we've been fighting with the British for 12 years. It's time we go to war. They aren't going to give in to us without that. But the first thing he has to do is persuade the delegates in that convention, the Virginia Convention of 1775, that, in fact, that's the thing to do. He begins by complimenting everybody in the room. And that's a very important point. And that's where I think where we have to start.
Yeah, and Roy, if there's anything that there's a lack of supply of, is that approach these days. These days, it's arm twisting. These days, it's acrimony. A whole lot of, avoidance, it seems, or disdain of the idea of figuring out how to have two winners. Someone has to win clearly, someone has to lose clearly. All of these not only make life less enjoyable, but it creates a toxic culture. A lot of times winning individuals win now, and boy, they do it with chest pounding, but later it comes back to haunt them because of the people they dominated get their hand up.
And that's right. And so in the most beautiful speeches that we have in American history, this one by Patrick Henry, the actual Declaration of Independence, certainly later the Gettysburg Address with malice, ending with malice toward none, in the middle of a war, mind you, the President of the United States, a very difficult war, the Civil War, says with malice toward none. What these speakers, these are statesmen who want to get a point across. Now, we're not asking that the businessman or the businesswoman have to be a major statesman. But what I am suggesting is before you go into such a meeting where you have a point where you want to persuade someone of the righteousness of your position, you need to have an outline. You have to prepare it. The Declaration of Independence by Thomas Jefferson went through 3, 4, 5, 6 iterations before it got to the point where it is now the Declaration of Independence of the United States in Congress, July 4, 1776, because that is what it took. And these were brilliant people, and they persuaded. Here, Thomas Jefferson not only had to persuade his own countrymen, he had to persuade the King of England. Now, it took 13 years to settle that issue before the War of Independence was ended. But George Washington came and did it. And if you look at his inaugural addresses, when you look at the work that George Washington did, again, it was through preparation, but it was an understanding that, yes, we're going to win through persuasion. And that's what happened. And today we have a world where I'm going to win through speaking the most nasty things. And that doesn't work. It alienates people. And in business, too, you do not want to go into your banker and say, how is it that you denied me this loan when I am such a great customer and you're an idiot? That's just not going to work.
Not persuasive. That's persuasive at all. And this is reality now. And there's just who doesn't like a winner? I mean, the idea of an amiable and group-minded winner is a great thing. What we don't like is someone who takes an approach that really burns bridges, and you're dealing with people who end up being enemies, maybe even victims in your victory, and all they're going to do is wait for their opportunity to retaliate. And it seems like tit for tat is the rule rather than cooperation.
And so one of the other points I want to make in one's outline, you have to also acknowledge things that exist and things that are maybe weaknesses in your case, in your argument. So, for example, in the effort to convince the public of the righteousness of the Constitution in 1789, which finally got ratified in 1791, in the Federalist Papers, those are the documents that were really the advertisement, if you will, the TikTok, the Instagram of 1789. One of the more important admissions was, if men were angels, no government would be necessary. So what the founders did in Federalist 18, I believe it is, James Madison says something amazing. He says, in essence, and I'm paraphrasing, we've looked at human behavior, we've looked at human history, and why did we structure our Congress the way we did, a House of Representatives that represent all the people of every of the 13 states at that point, and the Senate? The representatives come to Congress because we acknowledge that there is a reality in life, and that is self-interest. And the House of Representatives was designed to address self-interest. That is why there are representatives from each part of the country. And so the shipmakers in Maine and in Massachusetts had to deal with the tobacco growers in Virginia. But the goal was, and he says this, you come to Congress fighting like mad for your constituents. And there's nothing wrong with that. And we confuse today and we conflate disagreement with civil talk. We can disagree vehemently about things, but it doesn't mean you have to be disagreeable. And the beauty of these original writings is just that. And that's why I use Patrick Henry's speech often when I try to tell people about the power of persuasion. Don't denigrate the other side. You might believe they're wrong, and maybe they are wrong, and that's okay. But that you have a disagreement on a policy or how to proceed doesn't mean that the individual has some flaw or is evil. And that is what is missing today. And in our private discussions, meaningful business discussions, there's no reason why we cannot address people and give them the respect they deserve, even if we vehemently disagree with them about process and about policy.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, and to your, you know, to strengthen your point, or to confirm your point on my perspective, is, you know, the people should look at the anti-Federalist Papers as well as the Federalist Papers, because the anti-Federalist Papers defended the way to constitute the government was before the Constitution came. In fact, the authors of the anti-Federalists said that the Constitution, they call it the coup of 1788. That's what they called it, because it was dramatically different than the Articles of Confederation, which really, for all practical purposes, could not function and create a robust, viable government. It's full of issues. There's no question about it. But that this really attests to the persuasion that document brought. And they were smart about where they presented it, right? In newspapers across the United States, so that they could persuade opinion. It really did show a sense of strategy and thoughtfulness that we may not even thought of when you think of 18th century politics.
Well, 100%. And there's no question that that policy discussion, that argument, and when I say argument, I'm not talking about yelling and screaming and throwing things around. I'm talking about there's a realistic policy question. Do we want a centralized government, a central government of the 13 states, or do we want each state to operate on its own with some kind of loose partnership that will agree to share expenses? And that was truly the debate. And so George Washington and those who were called Federalists were called Nationalists. They wanted a centralized federal government. And in the end of the day, they win, but they won by vote and they won by persuasion. And that persuasion was through speech and advocacy. And so we see the founders using not just historical flourishes, but they're templates for great speech and legal advocacy, and we can use it in our own lives. And that's what I'm advocating here today, is don't ignore those great speeches of American history. It's just something you learned in history class. They were persuasive and they were effective. And if you want to be effective in your business, you can take those examples and use them in your business to persuade and, cajole. And there's nothing wrong with that.
David. Going way over. We're going to have to wrap it up on that. We're quickly moving into time. I'm excited about part two, though. We're going to jump ahead and look at Lincoln, the courts, and modern presidential persuasion, and really in how it's devolved as well as evolved over time. It's a very interesting conversation. I think one I wish I saw more of in media, and I'm so glad we had it on my show. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you, Kevin. A pleasure.
I'm Kevin Price. That's David Jaffa. You're listening to the nationally syndicated Price of Business.
That wraps up another Price of Business. I am glad to be with you. Really enjoyed it and enjoying our new home here on these stations around the country. I do want to remind you that the show continues 24/7. Not only do we have this weekly show that you can hear on this station, but we're on other stations around the country with a daily program as well. You can easily learn about them by visiting us at priceofbusiness.com. We affectionately say it is the show that never ends. And what we mean by that is that it continues 24/7 with the addition of new audio, video, articles, and more at priceofbusiness.com. While there, we'd like you to engage with us on social media. Follow us on Facebook and I'm sorry, like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Kevin Price Live and all of our sister sites as well. All right, I'm going to take a break until next time. Next week we'll be back with you with much more information for you, and look forward to that conversation. And I want to say again thank you to USA Business Radio to make it possible for this to have been commercial-free, an entire hour of commercial-free. And guess what? Even more commercial-free than public radio. So we're excited about that. Enjoy the rest of your day right here on this station.